Following Rabbi Weinreb is a difficult task. And essentially, I don't want to gild the lily, he said almost everything that has to be said. But I do want to point out one thing about the momentous nature of this gathering. We, as Torah observant Jews, are dedicated to Mesorah. We are dedicated to tradition. We do things as our parents did and as our grandparents did and as our great parents did, and that is the strength of Yiddishkeit. And yet, there are sometimes exceptions. My favorite story is that when in Bnei Brak, they began teaching in schools Ivrit be'Ivrit, which a right-wing faction disapproved of, and the Chazon Ish Shulchan Aruch did not react. So those who were the zealots came to the Chazon Ish and they said, Hayatochan Hayashoma, that you're not reacting and protesting to this. Do you know what Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, how he fought vigorously against teaching Ivrit be'Ivrit, and you're not reacting at all? So the Chazon Ish said that there was once a general who fought a battle, and after he died, his son, who was also an officer, succeeded him. And then when the country was attacked from the south, he sent the army to the north. They said, what are you doing? He said, that's what my father did. He said, that's ridiculous. When your father sent the army to the north, it's because that's where the enemy was coming from. He says, today the enemy isn't coming from the north, it's coming from the south. There's a time when we follow tradition and a time when we have to know that it's time for innovation. Right? There was a time when we could have an unquestioned Messiah. I'll raise my children the way I was raised. Right? Things have changed. It's not the same world. Now they tell a story about, Torah says that Noach came out of the Teva and became drunk. Noach ish tzadik tomim, I'm wondering, even object to irresponsible drinking, and Noach ish tzadik tomim became drunk. So they said, Noach knew how much he could assume, how much he could consume safely without getting drunk. And so when he came out of the Teva, he went back to that same quantity. But he did not recognize that it was no longer the same world. There had been a Mabul. And after there's a Mabul, the laws of the world change. We have gone through an era of a Mabul, a moral Mabul, where ethics and morality have been totally eroded. And it is in this world that we are raising our children, not the world in which we were raised. And I'm not saying that only of myself, who was raised in the 1930s, but I'm even talking to those of you who were raised in later years. The world deteriorates morally from day to day to day. And I needn't be explicit to tell you with what kind of tzoras of morality we are suffering from now. Perhaps you've been keeping up with some of the items in the paper where there has been an epidemic of young men and young women sinking into the depravity of immorality with internet addiction in the privacy of their homes. And I say the reason for that is very simple. Avraham Avinu said, the reason that he said that Sarah was his sister and was afraid that he would be killed to take his wife away from him, there is no Yiras Shemayim here. And we'll say, but wait a second, how can you say that? We are Kenahora, a community of great Yiras Shemayim. And I call your attention to the Gemara where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the unbelievably greatest of the great, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, whose Talmidim were such that Hillel, the great, was the youngest and the least of them. And when they came into Reb Yochanan ben Zakkai before he died, and they said, to give us guidance and give us a brocha, he said, halavai, that you should have the fear of God that you have of the fear of other people. And they said, that's what you're telling us, and that's what you suspect us? And he said, yes. A person will do things, but will be very careful not to do things that other people may be seeing and will be critical of him and condemn him for. But he doesn't have the same feeling that Hashem will see him and be critical of him. And if Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai could have said that to Rabbi Yonasan ben Uzziel and to Hillel, to the greatest of the great, then we have to realize how our generation may be lacking in Yiras Shamayim. Now, what I'd like to tell you, my friends, is not going to be something simple, something easy. And Rabbi Weinreb has said this is a lifelong job and a difficult job and a difficult struggle. When I spoke to Eretz Yisrael, I was speaking primarily about the problems of young people at risk. And yes, I said I was sorry that I wasn't, that this conference did not take place 20 years earlier, because for 20 years I've been saying our children are at risk. They are living in a world that is awash with corruption and awash with drugs and awash with alcohol. And our children are looking for something to take them out of their distress. You say, what distress? The distress of not having the feeling of shalva, of tranquility, of inner peace that people are looking for. And you know something? It's only natural as, not only as human beings, but even as animals, that we look for comfort and freedom of distress. What's so wrong with that? And what's so wrong with it is that we are told that Yaakov Avinu, right, when he came back after all of his tzores from having suffered from Esav and from Lavan, etc., Bikesh Yaakov Leshev B'Shalvo, Yaakov wanted tranquility. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, tranquility is going to be in Gan Eden. In this world, you don't get tranquility. It's a mistake to look for inner peace. We have to realize that life is a struggle and a difficult one. And the Mesillas Yesharim begins his first chapter, Choyvas Ha'odom Be'olomoy. What is your obligation in the world? Not what can you get from the world. Not can you get inner peace. But what is your obligation, and what is it that you have to do, and what is it that you have to achieve? Now, you know, my friends, there's Pirkei Avos, there are two important statements. One is, Asei Ritzoinoi Ritzoincha. Make your will the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have a Torah which is very clear as to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. That is the Rotzon Hashem, and our task is that we should have no other will other than Ratzon Hashem. It's not an easy task to do, but it can be done. And then the Pirkei Avos follows up. Batel Ritzoincha Mipnei Ritzoinoi. Set aside your own will in favor of His. We just said that you're going to make your own Ratzon the Ratzon Hashem. If you're going to want everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, then why do you have to set aside your, why do you have to negate your own Rotzen? And yet, Gemara says that that's what we're supposed to do. There's a Rashi, Rashi quotes a Sefri, that Rashi says that a person should not say, Eifshir b'basar chazir, I don't want to eat chazir. No way. A person should say, Efshi b'basar chazir, I want to eat chazir. But ma'asa, what can I do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm not allowed to. That's a rashi, and that's a halacha. Now let me ask you, my friends, which of you wants to eat chazir? Right? Which of us can say, I want to eat chaza, but I can't because it's prohibited? Right? If somebody will talk to us about chaza during mealtime, we'll put all our food away and we become nauseated. Who wants to eat chaza? Which of us would say, oh, yeah, I'd love to work on Shabbos? Can I do it? I'm not allowed to. Who wants to work on Shabbos? Which of us would like to say, oh, yeah, I'd like to have a sandwich on Pesach, but I can't because it's chometz and I couldn't eat chometz. Who wants to eat chometz on Pesach? And you know, Baruch Hashem, we have become so perfect in aseir etzoincha etzoincha as our will, doing what Hashem wants us to, that I don't know when we negate ourselves. When do we ever set aside our own will? And yet, the Gemara says we are supposed to set aside our own will and accept the authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How can we do that? We already want everything that He wants. One of the major problems in parenting that has come up in the last few decades, psychologists tell us that the greatest difficulty is represented by the fact that the most frequent diagnosis they make is oppositional defiant disorder. Children do not want to listen to parents. Now, how are we going to overcome that? And Rabbi Weinreb gave us the answer. Model it for them. Show them how it's done. Show them how you accept authority. Show them how you give up something that you want to do because you accept the authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because you accept the authority of the Shulchan Aruch, because you accept the authority of a Pesach. And you know, we'll have to be honest with ourselves. Let's look around as to how many things we actually want to do and do not do because the halacha says not to. Look around, you're not going to find too many. You know, we don't want to eat chas v'shalom treifs, we don't want to work on Shabbos, we don't want to do any of the yisurim, right? Where do we accept authority? And you know, being a Jew is not to be simple. Every day we are mekabel oil malchus shamayim. Oil malchus shamayim means it's a yoke. It's a burden. Yiddishkeit is not supposed to be simple and easy. Avodas Hashem means work. Yeah, when I grew up, I saw a little bit at least of Avodas Hashem. I knew that we had to take the chicken to the shochet, and then it had to be opened and cleaned out, and then it had to be kashered and salted and soaked. Right? Today, if you were to tell a young woman, do you know how to kosher a chicken? She'll look at you, what are you, crazy? What do you mean, are you kosher a chicken? And I remember how I used to make a filter fish, and the whole process, you know, even the kitchen, it was an avoider. In Pesach, there were two kinds of wine. There was the sweet wine, and there was the wine without sugar for diabetics. Right? Last year, there were 120 varieties of wine, of kosher wine, on the shelf. Now, nothing wrong with that. Right? Why shouldn't there be? But what could the side effect of that be? I remember what we used to eat on Pesach. Meat and eggs and potatoes and borscht. Gemano. Chocolate-covered marshmallows? Now, you walk into the store on Pesach, right? And except for bread, there's nothing you can't eat. Now, again, there is nothing wrong with it. I'm not a killjoy, right? And there's nothing wrong with having chocolate kosher marshmallows, and there's nothing wrong with having varieties of wine. No, there's a Gemara in Yerushalmi that says that the Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to ask us, after we come up to the Yom Adin, he's going to ask us, Nehenesa me'elomi, did you enjoy my world? The world is here for us to enjoy. And yet we must also recognize that in spite of the fact that there's so many wonderful things that we can enjoy, that the goal of life is not to be enjoying things. The goal of life is chayvus adam ha'olamot. What is it that we are to achieve? What must we do? What must we accomplish? Now, in the secular world, there's no question that the goal of life in the secular world is to get as much fun as you can. Get as much enjoyment as you can. Now, you know, very interesting thing. Those of you who know Yiddish well, tell me what the Yiddish word is for fun. There is no Yiddish word for fun. Now, there's the Yiddish word for pleasure, for enjoyment, yes. But fun? The meaning of fun, and why did you do it? For the fun of it. For the fun of it means without a goal. In Yiddishkeit, there is no such thing without a goal. Everything that is done has to be with a goal. And yes, if we're going to enjoy something, and if we're going to enjoy a fine wine, or we're going to enjoy delicacies, it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us that possibility, and we make a bracha, and we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for it. But the goal in life is not to enjoy. The goal in life is not even to be free of distress. That's what Yaakov Avinu wanted. He was reprimanded for it. We have to be able to live and accept some of the discomforts without expecting to escape from all of them. I was once sitting with a group of parents, and we were talking about the problems of children at risk. Major problem. Baruch Hashem that we now have a great deal of activity in it. There are representatives of MASC here, a wonderful organization to help parents deal with children at risk. And so the parents asked me, what can we do? And I said, look, let's begin with a very simple thing. Let's all go to all of your homes and open up the medicine chest and let's see what's there. I want to know how many medicine chests are there in which there are Valiums and sleeping pills. And I want to know why they're there. Valium is a medication. You don't take medications unless you're sick. A sleeping pill is a medication. You don't take a medication unless you're sick. And sleeping with having a sleepless night is not a disease. If it is, I'd be a very sick person today. It's not pleasant. And why are people swallowing Valiums or all the other tranquilizers? Simply because, you know, I don't feel the way I'd like to feel. I don't like the way I like to feel, so I got to take something to make myself feel good. And when the children see that, you know what their attitude is? You always have to feel good. And if there's something going on that I don't feel good, I find a way to do it. Whether it's alcohol or marijuana or ecstasy or heroin or cocaine or whatever, or Oxycontin or whatever else is available. We have to model for our children, and we have to model for them that we accept to show them that we have an obligation, and that's what life is all about, and that's what the family is all about. And incidentally, I do have to slip in a word about family because Rabbi Weinreb touched on that, and it is so, so, so important. Just want to report to you a piece of research that was done a number of years ago where they interviewed some researchers, interviewed thousands of families and got all different statistics about what the families were consisted of and their socioeconomic condition, everything else that they could find. And there were families in which there were identified problem children and families in which there were very healthy families and there were no problem children. And then they put all this data into the computers to see, is the computer going to be able to come up with some feature, significant feature, that can distinguish healthy families from unhealthy families. And surprisingly, the computer produced only one thing. That in the healthy families, the families ate together more often. Have you ever thought of that? That what's going to be unique about a healthy family is that the mother and the father and the children spend mealtime together. And today, you know, there's so many things to tear us apart. Baruch Hashem that there's a Shabbos on which we still eat together. But otherwise, you know, people go into the kitchen, they grab this, they grab this, they grab this, and the family doesn't eat together. And we should have understood that. We should have understood that by realizing that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, after decades of being treated inhumanely and wanted to make us an Am Kodesh and give us the Torah within 7 weeks, what did he give us as the first mitzvah? A Korban Pesach a family get together. Eat together and you'll be mentioned. And I must again follow up what Rabbi Weinreb said, that what we want from our children is to be mentioned. That's all. To be a mensch. What is it to be a mensch? Have you ever thought that when a young man and young woman get married, the bracha that they hear under the chuppah is, Yoytzer ha'odom. Hashem created a mensch. I mean, the wonderful bracha. What's that got to do with the chosen kala? But think a moment. What happens is, when a young couple get married, that he, the young man, has certain ambitions and certain desires in life or whatever, and he hopes that this woman will help make him sholem and help make all his desires gratified. And she sees in this young man someone who will help her hopefully fill all her ambitions. But you realize what's happening? He is out for his own gratification, and she is out for her own gratification. Now, one of the major differences between man and animal is that an animal only does things for oneself. No animal has the concept of chesed other than trained dogs that are pets and are taught how to do certain things. But animals in the wild, no tiger has ever yet called another animal and said, here, you can have this food, I have enough. That just doesn't happen. Giving up of oneself for the benefit of someone else, that is a uniquely human trait. And so we tell the Chosen Kala, you want to have a great marriage for the next 120 years, Yoytzer ha'odom, remember that you were created to be a mensch, not an animal. Remember that you have to act as a mensch and not only be motivated to what's going to please you, but to be able to give away from yourself and to sacrifice for the other person. And I think that if we model that, and if we have a shalom bayis, a true shalom bayis, not a shalom bayis like the one that I often refer to, where there's a shalom bayis of control and of terror. You know, they tell the story that during the communist Russia, a visitor from the West was taken to the zoo, and the government guide showed him, he said, we already have the messianic era here. What the prophet says, and he showed him in a cage. There was a lion with a lamb in one cage. And this individual was impressed. He couldn't deny what he saw with his own eyes. So later he mentioned it to a friend. I saw it with my own eyes. A lion and a lamb in the same cage. So the friend looked around to make sure that nobody from the KGB was watching. And he said, every day they give him a fresh lamb. Right. Yes, you can have a shalom bayis, a peace in the home where there is terror, right? Where there is such self-effacement by either spouse that the other one has total control and everyone is afraid to do something not to aggravate the other. That is not shalom bayis. Shalom bayis is a true feeling of love and a willingness to sacrifice and make the other person happy rather than what can I get out of the relationship. And I can assure you that when there is that kind of a shalom bayis and that kind of a family togetherness, the incidence of children at risk is significantly decreased. Maybe there is no absolute cure, but it is certainly a major factor in having children realize, I'm not here in order only to please myself. That's not my goal. This family stands for something else. This family within and without stands for doing for others. Yes, we don't always look for, shouldn't always look for shalva, but we should always look for simcha. And simcha does not necessarily mean the kind of joy and celebration that we usually associate with the word simcha. And this is where our Svarim HaKadoshim, whether it's Mesilas Yesharim or Tanya, tell us what Simcha is. That simcha is a feeling of fulfilling our obligation. Simcha is a feeling of wholeness, of becoming that which we are supposed to be, and working toward that which we are supposed to be. And that is a constant struggle. Because for what reasons known only to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He created us with the Yetzer Hara, which is going to be with us until our very last moment, and which we are going to have to fight against and struggle against. And in our doing so, we have simcha. Maybe it's not the kind of simcha that you have with a band and dance. That's a different kind of simcha. But the simcha of knowing that we are working toward shleimus, and this is where Rabbi Weinreb's point was so well made. It's a process. It is not the goal itself, but the goal is the process. And the process is the goal. As the Rebbe of Kotsk said, V'dorashto Hashem Elokecha u'matzoso. If you will look for Hashem, you will find Him. And he said, V'dorashto, if you are looking Him, that's the finding. It's not going to be something, some concrete thing that you can pick up, and something tangible. But it's the process that is the finding. And insofar as saying, well, my goal is, I would like to be at peace. And I say, that's a non-Jewish goal. Odom le'omol yivoled means we are created in order to struggle. And we have to model that for our children. And one of the other things that the Rebbe of Kotsk said, he says that a person should be aware of what kind of struggle he is facing, with the Yetzer Hara being his arch enemy, and he should realize and visualize that the Yetzer Hara is standing over him with an axe about ready to chop off his head. That's how you should feel. The struggle is with the Yetzer Hara. And so one chassid asked them, well, what happens if we can't visualize that? And the Rebbe said, that means he's already succeeded in chopping your head off. As long as our head is intact and our mind is intact, then we have to realize that we are engaged in a struggle. And that we have the koyach with the struggle. Not that we're given the koyaches of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and all the tzaddikim before, to be able, and with a neshama, with a chelik alekai mimal, a neshama that is part of Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself, that gives us the koyach to withstand the struggle. And if we manifest this in our own lives, and I think, look, you're going to have to go back and look, where can we do this? And I think that one of the points that Rabbi Weiner pointed out is a very good one. No, you can't say, I would love chazak, because that's not true. And you can't say, I would love to work on Shabbos, because that's not true. But what you can say is, oy, that little piece of gossip that you were about to tell me, I'm really interested in hearing about that. Yeah? What really happened over there? I'd really be interested in hearing about that. But I'm sorry, you're going to have to stop right where you are. I can't listen to that because of Lashon Hara. And perhaps this is the reason why in the last generation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Chofetz Chaim, to give us the enormous importance of observance Lashon Hara, because it's probably one of the few things that we can still say, Efshi Avala Torah Oso. I would love to hear what you've got to say. I mean, who doesn't want to hear the latest gossip? I'm sorry, I'd love to hear, but I can't. And I believe that if we implement that, we will have the zechus of the Chofetz Chaim with us, and will be megan on us to be able to save us from the difficulties of our generation, the difficulties that our children face. And so, my friends, what it comes down to is some very simple things. Yoytzer ha'odam, to realize that we are menshin, that we are not lower forms of life. To realize, as Rabbi Weiner pointed out, that we have a goal in life. To realize that we have to think of what is our purpose in life. To realize that we have to make self-improvement, which no animal can do. To realize that we have to plan ahead. And to realize that we are the only creatures that can give up from our own selves in order for the betterment of someone else. Whether it's tzedakah to a stranger, or whether it's to husband and wife in their relationship between each other, where the example should be, what can I do for you? There's no question in my mind that a true Shalom Bayis is the greatest gift that we can give our children. And I do want to share with you a personal thing which to me is very important. And by the way, once I get to that already, I'm going to go over to something that you may have heard me say, but I'll tell it to you again. A skill in parenting that I learned from my father. When I was a child, our living quarters was upstairs and the Smetlish was downstairs. And this is the 1930s, right? When many of the people who came over from Europe in the early 1900s had become peddlers, and they'd go around with their horse and buggy. This was the horse and buggy days. And they're collecting metal and paper and shmatas and whatever. And then they'd come to Mincha. They'd come an hour earlier. Right? Put the horse in the barn and come to the shul and sit in the back room and drink hot tea at 212 degrees, glass after glass, and play chess. These were Russian Jews who were good chess players. Well, I was downstairs so often watching them play chess, and within no time at all, I picked up what chess was all about. And pretty soon began playing them, and pretty soon began beating them. By the time I was 9 years old, I was a chess prodigy. There wasn't anybody who could beat me. One Rosh Hashanah afternoon, first day Rosh Hashanah, there was a very fine Rav from Chicago who was our guest for Rosh Hashanah. And so he came over to me in the afternoon and he said, want to play chess? I said, Yontif. He says, so what's wrong with playing chess and Yontif? Well, moving a few little pieces, there's nothing, no issue on that. I said, okay. So I played him 2 games of chess and I beat him. And I didn't come in and say, Abba, what did you want? It's not the way I behaved, you know. I came in and I stood quietly waiting to be recognized. He let me stand there for a few minutes and then he looked up and he said, you play chess on Rosh Hashanah? So I said, yeah, the Rosh said that we're allowed to. My father didn't say a word. He just looked back at his sefer and almost imperceptibly just shook his head once. All right, I got the message. Right. Megman. Right. The Rav was right. You're allowed to. But you don't have to do everything that you're allowed to. Right. Rosh Hashanah is not a game day. All right, I got my message. But the Cheretz, I'm not going to leave until my father tells me Gegezun Tehet. So I stood there. And he let me stand there, and after a few minutes, he looked up, and he had already a little twinkle in his eye, and he said, you checkmated him, didn't you? I said, twice. He said, Gegezun Tehet. That was a work of genius, right, of giving me the reprimand that I need, right, the musa that I need, but not letting me walk out feeling negatively about myself. And that's a skill that we have to look as to how we can do it. And the second personal story that I want to tell you has to do with what I mean, Yoytzer Ha'odom. Toward the end of his life, my father developed a form of cancer for which there was no treatment. And being that he was very well versed medically because he used to visit patients in the hospital every day, and he would discuss with the doctors, he knew a great deal about medicine. And I, being the doctor in the family, he called me in and he said, there's no treatment for this kind of cancer, is there? I said, no. He says, chemotherapy doesn't work for this. I said, no. But the side effects of chemotherapy, I would get. I said, yeah. He said, I don't see if it could accomplish anything, I would accept the suffering. But to accept the suffering for no reason doesn't make any sense. I said, you're right. All right, so he says, as long as we understand that we're not going to do chemotherapy. All right. When my mother spoke to the doctor said to her, there's not much we can do for the rabbi. We can try chemotherapy, but perhaps the most that we might get out of it is another 3 months. And my mother said, 3 months? For 3 days you would have to do it. Every single day is precious. Of course you're going to have chemotherapy. And she came into my father's room, And she read him the riot act. You've got to accept chemotherapy. After she left, my father said, I'm sorry that the doctor told her something that wasn't even true. Because I know that it's not going to extend my life. But you have to understand that if I refuse chemotherapy, then after I die, mother will say, if only I had insisted. If only I had put my foot down. He could still be alive today. And she'll feel guilty as to why she didn't insist. I don't want her to feel guilty. So, there is a reason why I should take chemotherapy. Not to extend my life, right? But to spare mother from feeling guilty. That is Yoitzer Ha'odom. That is being a mensch. And hopefully we will find good ways. We should all be spared from all kinds of illnesses and diseases. But there will be good ways in which we can do it. Right? Of children seeing that a person is willing to set himself aside for the welfare and for the well-being and for the happiness of the spouse. That is Yoitzer Ha'odom. That's the message that's given by the chuppah. And so, my friends, Rabbi Weinrib and I tried to give you some general points. At the many sessions that you've had, you've earned some more specifics. There's a wealth of reading material. And remember what we started off with, right? It may have well been a Messiah that we bring up our children the way we were brought up. But remember, it's a new world, a different world, and we need to find techniques that are going to enable us to keep the Messiah, but we may need new techniques to do it. Thank you for listening.